I think we're agonizingly close to getting the Senate to act on FITARA. There are different pieces of it that have been supported by various and sundry members of the Senate. I've had a very fruitful series of conversations with Tom Carper, the chairman of our counterpart committee in the Senate, and his staff. And I know Darrell Issa has talked to Senator Coburn, the ranking Republican member of that committee. So there's a separate bill on data center consolidations, and then there's the bulk of FITARA itself. So I'm really hopeful, especially, frankly, after the healthcare website difficulties, that perhaps people are now seized with the mission that we must do a better job of federal IT acquisition. And, of course, I wish one could say that the healthcare rollout was unique, but it frankly characterizes large federal IT procurements.
And I think that's something that came out at the hearing, which I want to get to in a sec. But before we go down that path, talk about how are you promoting or discussing the importance of FITARA with some of your colleagues on the Senate side?
FITARA would be the first major rewrite of how the federal government procures, acquires, and manages information technology. We're a huge driver. We spend $81, $82 billion a year. A lot of that, frankly, is siphoned off to maintain old legacy systems. A lot of it, frankly, is used quite inefficiently. And we need to do much better, because if that money could be on point and efficiently driven, it could actually add capacity to federal agencies that are experiencing stagnant budgets or cutbacks because of sequestration. So I think that's really important. I think we also have to address the workforce issue in the federal government. You know, the bulk of IT, federal IT employees are 50 or over, and the minority is, say, 30 or under. That's the mirror opposite of what characterizes the private sector, and that's not to pick on people, those of us who are over 50, but it is to say that we've got to recruit a whole new cadre of competent people who have strong IT backgrounds into the federal workforce, and we need to do that yesterday. We also need to streamline management. We have 250 people with the title of CIO, Chief Information Officer, spread out over 24 federal agencies. That means that there's no accountability. No one's really in charge. People are hidebound by regulations and procedures that stifle innovation that characterizes, again, the private sector. Interestingly, President Obama himself talked about that one of the reasons his campaign was successful in deploying information technology in groundbreaking ways was that they didn't have the burdensome federal regulations and procedures in place. They were able to innovate. They were able to give flexibility to managers to make critical decisions and investments. We want to replicate that in the federal government. Right now, we can't do that. So getting FITARA into law, I think, is a real first step. It's not going to solve all the problems, but I think it is going to create a whole new environment for IT management that we badly need.
Let me pull the string a little bit on that CIO responsibility authorities. I know that the FITARA does not say we're going to give CIOs carte blanche and they're in charge of everything, but it does really increase the responsibilities and authorities. Some would say that's the wrong direction, that CIOs giving budget authority is not the answer. It's really the program people, and it's the CIO's ability to influence the program people. You don't agree with that. You think the CIO having a budget authority is the real key here.
Well, I don't think it's either or. I think we do need to make sure program directors and contract project directors have some real authority. We also need to make sure they have continuity. And whether that's the CIO who manages that or the agency head, what we do need to do is make sure that people can stay with a long-term IT investment program, you know, for either the life of that project or a good chunk of it, because constant turnover is very disruptive and means that you sort of accrete that program with other expectations that may or may not be formally written in the original RFP. I can think of one major IT procurement I'm familiar with when I was in the private sector, like a three-year procurement worth a lot of money. It had 17 project directors with the federal client. Well, that just is a recipe for problems. So trying to create a career path that's rewarding that is rewarded and recognized so that people can actually have a feather in the cap in completing a major IT acquisition successfully. That's a cultural change and a management change that has to be put in place as well. Now, Vitara encourages that but doesn't spell that out in some kind of formulaic way, but that's a necessary ingredient too. So I think we need to do both.
And that takes us back around to the healthcare.gov hearing that happened a couple of weeks back for your committee, as well as the discussion around it and some of the systemic problems that healthcare.gov once again showed is out there with IT and procurement. From your perspective, which parts of Vitara do you think would help to ensure that another healthcare.gov type of debacle would not happen again?
For one thing, I'm not sure that it was clear there was somebody in the federal government who was in charge. There was no project director. That's astounding. What could go wrong with that? And so you had sort of a stovepipe approach, even with the private contractors, that didn't sort of bring this all together as a piece. You didn't have consistent testing to make sure that the rollout would be problem-free or mostly problem-free. Warning signs about technical glitches in advance of the rollout were either ignored or dismissed, and as a result, we had what we had. And, I mean, I think it's a real management failure, but I do think it's a great, you know, exhibit A for why Vitara might have made a difference and might have at least encouraged a different kind of management mentality about this very important rollout for one of the most transformative pieces of legislation in the last generation.
Now, the other piece is the White House piece. Obviously, Steve Van Roekel has testified before your committee and subcommittee several times. He seems to warming up each time he testifies about Vitara a little bit more. Even at the healthcare.gov hearing, he made some positive comments. Have you had conversations with the White House or Steve Van Roekel, the federal CIO, about Vitara?
Not outside of the hearing context, although I had met with Steve Van Roekel prior to that many months ago, strongly encouraging him to look at Vitara as a friendly piece of legislation, because much of Vitara, frankly, codifies many of the reforms both Steve Van Roekel and his predecessor advocated in the early years of this administration. So this is not an adversarial bill at all. And as I've told him both publicly and privately, you're not going to get a friendlier IT bill out of Congress than this one. If I were they, I would take it and run. OMB, you know, is always a problem. They would rather not have Congress mucking around in anything the executive branch does. And they seem to have told us one thing and told the Senate something else. So we're trying to straighten that out. But I think OMB has to speak with one tongue and quite clearly about if it's got concerns, identify them. And if you don't, then get out of the way.
Can you give me at least at a high level any of the concerns that OMB has expressed to you?
No, you'd have to ask them. OMB has not laid out for me any concerns other than vague legislative interference with the prerogatives of the executive. We're doing fine. We don't need any more legislation. Well, that line might have worked prior to the rollout of the healthcare website, but that doesn't pass the giggle test with the public or with members of Congress today.
I understand that the committee on at least Chairman Issa's side has tried to reach out to OMB several times. They've gotten nothing back. You've had more luck talking to them? Or
no,
again?
I've had the same experience. I have had good conversations with Steve Van Roekel. I have not had any kind of reaction from OMB itself in terms of whether they like or don't like the legislation, and if they don't, what is it that bothers you that we could perhaps address? They were certainly invited, along with other federal agencies, to participate in the drafting process. Remember, we kept this bill open, and we rewrote large sections of it based on feedback from October of last year to February of this year. So that's a long time to keep a bill open, to try to make sure we got it right. And I think OMB has an obligation to play straight with us if they have any lingering concerns, because they have not shared them with us. In my conversation with my colleagues in the Senate, they apparently have made noises to them that they do have some concerns, but they have not identified them. And that's not playing straight with members of Congress. This is an important piece of legislation, and I'm not about to have it damaged in the dark of night by a stiletto.